Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number. And by Grands Biscuits. Your Grands Biscuits from the refrigerator are now also available in the freezer, so you can make as many or as few as you need. You can enjoy the home-baked taste of Grands Biscuits tonight. Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been cold and gray and gloomy, and the pileated woodpecker's been knock, knock, knocking out there in the woods, which gives you this forlorn feeling somebody's trying to get in, and nobody is answering. It was Thanksgiving, and the sky briefly brightened up a little bit, all those exiled children coming home in their cars, driving up. You can almost see them as they approach town. There's one spouse does not want to come. He is driving. There are anger rays coming out of his head, and his wife is getting teary-eyed, seeing the grain elevators and the steeple of the Lutheran Church and Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility. And she's pointing out things to her children from her childhood, and the children are looking at it, and they're thinking, how do people live here? There's no cell phone service here. All of the computers are dial-up. There are no shopping centers. How do people, and why do they live here? They're not sure. His mother-in-law is preparing a special meal for him. She has put oysters into the dressing. She's gone all out. She's trying out new recipes. She's bought a Sauvignon Blanc that cost $25. But he still will not be happy. He will simply endure this long, long afternoon of Thanksgiving. All over the world, there are exiled children walking along Oxford Street in London, walking down the Via Veneto, down down in Rome, and who are on this day, they remember, even over in Europe or in Tokyo, they remembered it's that Thursday in November, and they think of those people back there. Just the smell of simple foods bring back all of these memories. You open up a can of cranberries, and suddenly they're all there in the room with you. Those aunts who are fussing at each other, and uncles who are dozing in the corner. These people who were enormous characters, who were mysterious and threatening and all-powerful when you were a child. But now you see them as in a tableau, and you can walk up to them. They're sitting there motionless, and you can see their skin and their hair, and they're only human. They're only people. They're so very, very fragile. The Lutheran Church held a Thanksgiving service because nobody likes to come on Thursday morning. They held it on Wednesday evening. So it's packed with people, and about 15 minutes into the service, there was this powerful smell that people thought they recognized, and yet they couldn't believe it. It was like the tide had gone out. It was like the lake had sprung a leak, and all the fish had died. It was a kind of a sour, pungent smell, and they knew that the lutefisk had arrived for the annual feast. It's not until Wednesday, but somehow it had come this Wednesday evening. Why would it come so soon? The organist who was playing Now Thank We All Our God changed to a minor key accidentally, and somebody got up and closed the doors. The janitor came up from the basement. He wondered if there was a stop toilet or something. It's a powerful smell. Lutefisk, this is the food that we eat in honor of the Norwegian ancestors who were poor. That's why they came here. And this was all they could afford when they came over during the great herring famine of the 1870s. Was this cod that had been dried in a lye solution, which dried it so it was like elm bark. You could keep it forever, and then you reconstituted it in water, rinsing it over and over to get the lye taste out, which you never could completely. It was the food of poverty. It's one of those foods that cultures have as a badge of membership. The French eat brains and the innards of animals, and they eat snails. as a way of showing that they are French. New Yorkers might eat knishes, or they might eat gefilte fish, or they might eat oysters on the half shell, which a Lutheran from Lake Wobegon would gag at the thought of seeing that raw bivalve making its way towards your lips. But here's Lutefisk. The man drove up in a truck and said Anderson Fish Products on the side. It didn't even say Lutefisk because you didn't need to say it. You could smell it. It's Lutefisk. He unloaded 700 pounds of it on a big hand cart, and he wheeled it in. He said, well, I was driving through here, and I figured I might as well stop. I had your order already, and Lutefisk will keep. Well, there's no doubt about that. It will. You could pile it outdoors. Wild animals would not touch this. They used to reconstitute it in the lake. They would put it in the shallow end of the lake, and all of the northern and walleye would swim to the other side of the lake. You could catch all the fish you wanted. You went to the opposite side, the non-Lutefisk side. So Dottie and Debbie, who are the Lutefisk queens, opened up the plastic bags, and they got the lutefisk out, and they dried it with cheesecloth, and they packed it away in the cooler, and all the lutefisk juice that had run down in the sink, they washed it out with vinegar, and yet you could still smell it. It was still sort of a powerful smell. People say, you know, there's good lutefisk and there's bad lutefisk. They say, you know, when it's properly made by the right person, it really is pretty good. People say this the same way you would put cheese in a trap to draw the mice in. They want to get you to taste it and get the taste of poverty in your mouth. That's what lutefisk is. It's the taste of the sorrow of our ancestors. Dottie and Debbie are the daughters of Inga, who died 10 years ago and who was the queen of lutefisk for years and years in Lake Wobegon. And she made lutefisk for King Håkon of Norway when he made the mistake of coming to Minnesota just before Christmas. He didn't know what he was getting into. The king was a civilized man. His taste ran more toward French cuisine, but he arrived in town after town after town, all of these Norwegian settlements, in early December, and at each one, the king stood and he had to listen to a children's choir sing to him. Here was a man who loved Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald, having to listen to yet one more version in bad Norwegian of Paul and His Chickens. And let us go to the forest and collect birch boughs for Mary's wedding. And then a small flaxen-haired child in a peasant costume not seen in Norway in the past century walked up and offered the king a plate, and it had this congealed dish on it, and she gave him a fork, and all of these proud Norwegians stood and watched as the king looked at the plate, and the king, knowing his kingly duty, took a piece, rather small piece, people thought, and he put it into his mouth, and he stood there thoughtfully. They watched him, and he looked at them. And then a man came forward with a camera the size of a bread box. This was back before cell phones, children. This was back when phones had wires attached to them, and you just used them to make phone calls. You didn't take pictures with cell phones at all. He had this big, enormous camera with a flash like a bomb going off. And he knelt and he took a picture of the king, and people thought they saw in that instant the king's hand go to his mouth. They weren't sure. They weren't sure. And they didn't want to ask him, of course. And then when he left, they saw this little lump of something on the on the floor. Well, they didn't want to ask him, is that yours? Did you leave that? No, they didn't. Inga just cleaned it up and he went away, and they developed the picture. And yes, indeed, there was his hand to his mouth. He went back to Oslo. You can imagine him going back. Man went, landed, the car picked him up, took him back to the palace, and he changed into his jeans and his t-shirt, and he went upstairs for supper, and they prepared him a very nice green salad and an onion soup, and then they brought him the entree, and he looked at it. He said, what is this for that day? They said, that's fish. I don't care for fish, he said. Make me a ham and cheese sandwich, he said. He still had this taste in his mouth, even though he had drunk of beautiful white wine and had a little cognac to chase it with. He still had this taste in his mouth. You see, the king's family came from Denmark, not Norway. They were Danes, and they never had had to make that trip across the Atlantic. 5, 6, 7 days in the North Atlantic storms and land poor and ignorant in a strange country and make their way to this flat, barren place in the middle, having left the most beautiful nation in the world, Norway. His family had never had to go through that, but now he was able to experience it firsthand, just by a taste of lutefisk. He had tasted the sorrows of the poor. It's good. You might like it. You want to try it. Taste it. Try it. Lutefisk. Ask somebody for it. Lutefisk. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.
Support for this podcast comes from Grand's Biscuits. Your Grand's Biscuits from the refrigerator are now also available in the freezer, so you can make as many or as few as you need. You can enjoy the home-baked taste of Grand's Biscuits tonight.